Support for this podcast is provided by That Cast Creative. Brand your business and connect with your audience by creating a custom podcast. Learn more at thatcast.com.
Discover the growing lineup of That Cast Network podcasts and videocasts at thatcast.com.
At some point, the Pac-12 conference is going to have to make a change of leadership because it flat out embarrassed itself this week. Just flat out embarrassed itself. And if the Pac-12 wants to get competitive nationally and stop handing over national championship trophies to the SEC and the Big Ten and the ACC, and they want to get back in this ballgame, you're going to have to make a change, I think, at the top of the conference in terms of leadership.
That Cast Network presents The No Huddle, an in-depth and fun trip through the 2018 Oregon football season with host Justin Myers.
On a very happy Monday, welcome into the No Huddle podcast. I am your host, Justin Myers, and what a weekend it was for Oregon football. And we've got lots and lots of stuff to get to over the next couple of minutes. And as always, I'm going to start with the three things I learned from over the weekend. I've also been noticing this is the problem with podcasting is there's no parameters here. It's not the problem. It's actually a blessing for a guy like me who can just sit and ramble on and on and on. But I get there's no parameters. There's no commercial breaks. And we take a couple of breaks here during the show, but there's no real time crunch. And so usually as we start the show, I always like to give three things that I learned from over the weekend. And I've been listening back and I'm realizing that I've just been going on one thing I learned and I just talk about it over and over and over again. And sometimes I get to number two. Sometimes I get to number three. I'm going to try my best to see if I can get to all of the three things we learned from over the weekend. We'll also get to the Pac-12 power rankings and some Q&A a little bit later on in the program. But Oregon with the huge overtime win over Washington at Autzen Stadium. And the first thing I learned is this became Mario Cristobal's team on Saturday. I've been saying it since the beginning of the season, since we started this project, each and every week, almost like a broken record, because the more you watch this team play, the more you watch this team prepare, you see the way it handled the adversity of the loss against Stanford, the way it battled back and then took care of Cal, and then the way that they played and won against Washington. I've been saying week in and week out that we are going to learn an awful lot about Mario Cristobal, because let's be perfectly honest, even the most hardcore Oregon football fan probably had very little idea who this guy was when he took the assistant coaching job last year. And you can do a quick Wikipedia and remember, like, oh, that's right, that was the guy at Florida International. And he spent some time at Alabama, but you didn't have any idea about the way that he was going to build a program. You didn't have any idea of the way, the style that he wanted to play. And, you know, I kept hearing and I keep talking to people in the college football world that Mario Cristobal is an offensive lineman and a line of scrimmage mentality guy. And he is going to build this team eventually to win at the line of scrimmage. And Oregon's never been built that way. It just never has. Oregon's never been able to recruit the size and strength of offensive linemen that can win at the line of scrimmage, that can win the point of attack, that can go in and out-muscle teams. Oregon has always been able to out-fast teams, whether it was their pace or whether it was with their players. They just always had faster players, more explosive players. And then, of course, from Mike Bellotti to Chip Kelly, they just had innovative offenses. And on Wednesday, on Saturday, I go down to Autzen Stadium. I'm sitting there and I'm watching Oregon play Washington. And it's funny because Washington is kind of built that way now, too. When Chris Peterson took over the Washington Huskies, I figured, like many people, he was going to build them up like they did at Boise State and put a team with a lot of offense, a lot of innovation, and they have been built a lot like Oregon is now as well. Like, they want to run the ball. They want to control the line of scrimmage. They win with defense. And so Oregon going toe-to-toe with the best defense in the conference, one of the best offensive lines in the conference, one of the best running backs in the conference in Myles Gaskin, and Oregon goes toe-to-toe and gets into a slugfight with Washington. And I'm watching this game, and about halfway through the third quarter, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this is exactly what Washington wants. I think Oregon may be in trouble here. Now, one of the things we could say that I learned each and every week is that I don't know what I'm talking about half the time, but I'm just watching this game and I'm like, this is exactly the type of game that Washington wants to play. Why is Oregon getting in a slugfest here? And I said a couple of weeks ago that with the rotation that Oregon has been running at running back, which is no longer there, but this was in the non-conference when they were running, five different running backs, and the talent that Justin Herbert has, and I've figured Oregon is going to be a throw-first offense. And throughout most of the non-conference, it sure looked like that. And then they go toe-to-toe with Washington. And Mario Cristobal gets into slugfest, and I think fell in love with it. Because Oregon made no attempt to push the pace of the game. Oregon made no attempt to try to get into a shootout. And usually, with evenly matched teams, and I do believe Oregon and Washington are evenly matched, the home team usually has an advantage in who is going to push the tempo, who is going to control the speed of the game. And Oregon, for whatever reason, is what I'm thinking at the time, is not pushing the tempo. They're not pushing the ball down the field. They're in a slugfest with the team that is, even more so than Stanford, the best team in the conference equipped to handle that. And then, of course, Oregon wins in overtime, running the ball, taking some chances, some big throws by Herbert, but more importantly, a win for the line of scrimmage, a win for the defense, a complete win. I mean, you think about everything that had to happen for Oregon to win. Herbert had to play well. He didn't have to take the team on his back, but he had to play well. The touchdown at the end of the first half was huge. It was a big throw, a big third downs, a big performance in overtime. Oregon had to run the ball and control the line of scrimmage. They did that. They had to get big stops on defense. They did that. And they had to get a little bit lucky. They did that. So when you look at all the factors in this, the thing that I learned the most over this weekend is this win against Washington was Justin Herbert's biggest win. But I don't think we're going to look back and say that's Herbert's signature win. This was Mario Cristobal's signature win. Because Oregon played the type of football that I think he wants to coach. And it's going to be an adjustment for Oregon fans, and I don't think fans are going to care as long as Oregon keeps winning the game. But if you watch the style of play and the fact that Oregon ran the ball 44 times, 44 runs, ton of them on first down, trying to control the line of scrimmage, never once looking to push the pace. I mean, you just look at the amount of plays. You look at the amount of yardage. Neither team was over 500 yards in a Pac-12 game, in an overtime Pac-12 game. This looked like a Big Ten, SEC type of game. And I think Oregon fans better get used to this type of style, and I think it's going to be successful. I was talking to someone from ESPN earlier last week about what people in college football are saying about Mario Cristobal, and he said it's the way that Jim Harbaugh built Stanford. Now, Oregon will always have flash because you're going to have Nike, you're going to have uniforms, you're always going to have that kind of a kind of flair, but it used to coincide with the way that they played offensively, and I think that's going to be gone. Oregon is going to be a workhorse team, and if you look at the way that they were able to beat Washington, they did it going toe-to-toe with the biggest bully on the block. The Huskies have kicked the Ducks' teeth in the last 2 years when they had more talent and were on their way to a college football playoff 2 years ago and then another Big Six Bowl last year. And Oregon didn't try to win with trick plays. Oregon didn't try to win with Herbert's arm and putting everything on his back. Oregon won against Washington going toe-to-toe into a slugfest with the biggest bully on the block, which is a huge, huge step forward because this is the team and the style of play that Mario Cristobal wants to coach. So that's the first thing I learned from over the weekend. Second thing I learned from over the weekend, when you look at the way Washington and Oregon played, get used to it because these two teams are going to be on the top of the Pac-12, not just the Pac-12 North, but these two teams will be on top of the Pac-12 for a long, long time. I mentioned it last week. When you look at the Oregon-Washington rivalry, and they played each other, I believe this was the 111th time that Oregon and Washington have played each other, just the sixth time that both teams were ranked. There was a handful of times in the mid-90s where both teams were playing well. There was a handful of times in the early 2000s when both teams were playing well. Other than that, Washington dominated the series in the late 80s, early 90s. Oregon dominated the series from the early 2000s all the way up until 2016. And then, of course, Washington with the two big wins the last two seasons. Those days are over. Chris Peterson stayed at Boise and turned down offer after offer after offer, looking for his perfect job, which tells me he's not going anywhere. He's going to be at Washington. He's going to be at Washington for a long, long time. And I've said it before, I think Oregon lucked out with Willie Taggart leaving for Florida State and then being able to bring in Mario Cristobal, because I didn't think that Willie Taggart was an Oregon lifer. And I think Cristobal has a chance at being in for the long haul, because something happens to a coach when you get fired, when you've got your plan all set out in front of you, and then all of a sudden somebody just rips the rug out from under you. Your priorities change. And you're not all of a sudden looking for the next big thing. Willie Taggart has never had the rug pulled out from underneath him. There's nothing against him. He just never had that happen. He was a hotshot assistant, got the head job at Western Kentucky, built that team into a bowl team, did the same thing at South Florida, then got the job at Oregon. Then his dream job showed up at Florida State probably 3 years before he ever imagined it. But he was always looking at Florida, Florida State, Miami, one of those schools. He was not long for Oregon. He was not a lifer, because he had a plan in place of moving up, moving up, moving up. And if you look at what his ultimate goal was likely to be the head coach at Florida State or at Florida. I know that Mario Cristobal played at Miami and he coached with Nick Saban in Alabama. And it would be easy to say, yeah, Justin, can't you say the same thing about Cristobal? I don't think so. Like I said, something changes when a coach gets fired. When he was at Florida International and he had his whole coaching career out in front of him, and all of a sudden he gets fired and has to start over as an assistant, and he goes to Alabama, and now your priorities change. You're not necessarily looking to constantly climb the ladder. I think you'd look for a home. Oregon gave him that opportunity. I think he's going to be at Oregon for a long, long time. And I think, like I said, second thing I learned is you better get used to it, because Oregon and Washington, this rivalry is not going anywhere. This rivalry is going to be here for a long, long time. And this, I think you're going to see a stretch of 10 or so years where both teams are playing well. And it's good for the rivalry. There's a reason why this rivalry doesn't resonate across the country. I mean, it doesn't. If you were to go and ask somebody in Ohio or ask somebody in Pennsylvania or down in Mississippi about Oregon, Washington, they wouldn't have any idea about the rivalry. Because the best rivalries, the two teams are both good. There's a reason why we know about Ohio State and Michigan. It's because both teams are usually pretty good. The hatred and the animosity and the venom is there with Oregon, Washington, especially their fan bases. But the notoriety isn't there nationwide, because it's usually played in the middle of the season and it's usually not played for anything. Because there hasn't been a time when both teams are good. That's changing. Cristobal and Peterson are going to be rivals, I think, for a decade or longer. So that's the second thing that I learned over the weekend. And here's the third thing. And I'd questioned, and it's a little bit back to the first thing I learned, but I'd question Oregon's maturity. I think there were times this year where you saw sleepwalking against San Jose State. The way that the Stanford game completely unraveled on them, that goes to maturity, the penalties that have become an issue, the turnovers that have become an issue. But I'll tell you what, I still think you can question Oregon's maturity, but you can't question this team's toughness anymore. That was one of the big criticisms of Chip Kelly's teams, not, of course, in Oregon, because nobody would ever criticize Chip Kelly's teams, but the criticism is always, well, yeah, it's a nice offense and they run fast and they go up pace. But what happens when they face the SEC or the Big Ten and those guys smack them in the mouth? They're just not big enough. They're not tough enough. And you know that was the criticism with Mark Helfrich in that disastrous season 2 years ago, is that when things got tough, that team wanted to quit. And there was actually players in the locker room saying the players didn't care. And there was a lack of toughness there. This team is flat out tough. And I will say this too. Washington is flat out tough. And I think both of these teams over the next couple of years could, if USC gets their act together, which it looks like they did, could change the perception of West Coast football. Because at some point in the Pac-12, somebody has to look around and go, you know what? The way it's going isn't working. High-flying offenses, very talented quarterbacks, and you know, putting up a lot of yards and a lot of points is great for TV at 7 o'clock at night and Pac-12 after dark and everything else. But then you get to the college football playoff, or you get into Big Six bowls, or you get into marquee non-conference games, and it's just not working. So I think Oregon and Washington over the next couple of seasons are going to change the perception of Pac-12 football. They're also, by the way, don't think Stanford's going anywhere. Stanford down this year. It's because they had to replace a quarterback, but David Shaw and Stanford will be back within a couple of seasons. USC has always been able to go toe-to-toe because they just have the resources. They've got the recruits. But if you add USC, Stanford gets back on track the way they've been the last couple of years. Oregon continues to build the way Cristobal wants to build this team. And Washington, all ball control, defense, winning at the line of scrimmage, the conference and the perception of the conference could be tilting over the next couple of seasons. It's not going to happen overnight. And maybe I'm blowing this one game out of proportion because I'm a little fired up and a little excited. But I think the perception of the Pac-12 is going to be changing over the next couple of seasons when you see the way Oregon is now going to be built. So there you go. Those are the three things that we learned over the weekend. Lots and lots of stuff to get to. And I do want to remind everybody that we are a member of the ThatCast podcast network. We're a production of ThatCast. Also, go on iTunes, go on Spotify, rate and review the podcast, tell everybody what's going on, use the word of mouth, and as I mentioned, family, friends, two strangers, that's all we ask. And the more you spread the word, the more people will find out about what we're doing here and we'll be able to crank out more and more and better quality podcasts. It's going to be, it's rolling downhill. Like I said, that snowball keeps building each and every week, but we need your help. So rate and review. It's not difficult, guys. It's just a couple of taps on your phone. Just get in there, rate and review, throw some 5 stars on there. If you think we're at a 2-star, I mean, we're like halfway through the season. I can't believe you're still hanging on, hoping for more. Coming up, we're going to get to my Pac-12 power rankings, a weird, weird day in the conference. Also, we'll get to some Q&As and some final thoughts a little bit later on. But this is the No Huddle Podcast, part of the ThatCast Podcast Network. Back with the Pac-12 power rankings in just a moment. I am your host, Justin Myers. Price Financial Group, wealth
management. Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you. Simplify. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.
Want to advertise on this podcast or one like it and reach a targeted and engaged audience? Go to thatcast.com to start reaching our audience.
All right, here we are, No Huddle Podcast. Welcome back. I'm your host, Justin Myers. Did a lot of discussion about Oregon, Washington, and the big win for the Ducks at Autzen Stadium, but it was another weird weekend in the Pac-12, and I think some shift in the power in the Pac-12 South. Also, with Washington State on the bye, they sneak into the top 25, and they sneak up a couple of spots in the Pac-12 power rankings. I know that you guys, as I mentioned, each and every week, you're on the edge of your seat. You're like, I know we got the AP poll. I know we've got the committee's going to be releasing their top 25 here pretty soon, but you guys care about the Pac-12 power rankings, and that's why I deliver them to you. So plus teams will get a Pac-12 power rank bump, but we start at the bottom, and Oregon State's going to remain on the bottom for a long, long time. The Beavs probably had their best week this week because they didn't play anybody. They got a week off. Offense has some chance to has a chance over the next couple of weeks to maybe put a scare into some teams, but I don't see them winning a game from here on out. And there's no other team in the conference that you could say that about. So Oregon State still sits at the very bottom of the Pac-12 power rankings. One of the biggest drops in the last couple of weeks. I mean, what is going on at Cal? I mean, Justin Wilcox's team there, and you knew when he took over that program that it was going to be a task to rebuild, but they have looked absolutely awful over the last couple of weeks. And it started with the loss to Oregon. They lose to UCLA. Not just lose to UCLA, but they get smoke shot. Look, UCLA, other than playing Washington kind of close, UCLA has done nothing this year. And it almost looked like Chip Kelly was in a position where he was just going to start playing younger, younger, and younger guys and just start planning for next season. And with Oregon State, there were a lot of people wondering, could UCLA even get a conference win? Well, they got a big-time conference win, and they smoke-showed Cal. Cal has been a mess. So like I mentioned, Oregon beats them at home. Arizona beats them. And then they lose to UCLA. They go from being undefeated, ranked in the top 25. They've dropped three in a row and have not looked good in any of those games. So Cal drops all the way down to number 11. Arizona barely squeaks above Cal, and that was because they won in the head-to-head, but Arizona gets smoke-showed by Utah. Utah's going to be an interesting team. We're going to talk about them here in just a moment, but Arizona looked completely outclassed by Utah. It was one of those dreadful Friday night games, which I hate that they even schedule them, but they weren't even competitive in that ball game. UCLA, tip of the cap to the Bruins. They move up a couple of spots because they got the win, but they're still one of the bottom four teams in the conference. Chip Kelly's not going to a bowl game. He's not going to be a factor in the South. You take your win against Cal. I think you're going to have a shot if you're UCLA against Arizona State or maybe Arizona, but you're not beating USC. They already lost to Colorado. UCLA's got still big-time problems, but credit to Chip Kelly. He got his first win of 2018. Take that to the bank. So UCLA coming in at number 9. Number 8 in the Pac-12 power ranking, Arizona State. I think Arizona State can be competitive in ball games. I think ASU is going to be a thorn in some team side. I'm not one of these people that are coming out and praising Herm Edwards and praising Arizona State for that hire. I don't think they're going to be a factor. That Michigan State win after what happened with Michigan State, Penn State looks a little bit better, but I don't think Arizona State's going to be a factor in the South, but they're good enough, as I've mentioned, to be a thorn in people's sides. After Arizona State, oh, how the mighty have fallen. Stanford continues to tumble. And Stanford, I know they were off this week as well, but again, the way that they got beat by Utah, the way that they got beat by Notre Dame, when you go back and really look at that Oregon game, and that was a gift of a victory, it's just hard to put Stanford in the top half of the conference. After Stanford, I've got Colorado. Colorado took it on the chin. I've said this for years. I wish I could remember which coach told me this. I've been lucky enough in my career to be able to interview lots and lots of coaches, but a college football coach told me one time, is like, listen, the hardest games you will have all year are your conference road games. Those are the hardest games you're going to have all season long. All those teams are familiar with you, their fan bases, everybody else. Nothing about those games are special. Like, you can go to a non-conference game, and if you're going to a place maybe you've never been before, it can be kind of a special road trip. None of those games are special. They're all kind of supposed to be a business trip, but conference road games are always the toughest. I think Colorado is still pretty good. I still think they've got a shot in the South, but it looks like USC is starting to figure some things out. And I mentioned that, and I'm going to talk about USC in a moment, but I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. But that's the part about USC that scares me, is their late season heroics that always seem to happen. So we got Colorado sitting there at number six. Number five, Utah. Man, what an unbelievable couple of weeks for Utah. They go on the road and significantly beat Stanford. Then they just cream Arizona. I know that was a home game. I don't think Arizona's very good, but Utah did what you're supposed to do to inferior opponents, and they blew them out. So Utah gets a couple of nice bump ups in the power rankings. And you know, the Utes, I think the South now is still a three horse race. I didn't think it was. I thought Colorado was the clear favorite. USC's coming on. Utah's coming on. Oregon at Utah is what? Their second toughest game they have on the rest of the schedule? Oregon still has to play at Wazoo this next week. Then they've got to go on the road to Utah a little bit later on. Those are going to be two tough, tough wins for Oregon if they want to continue this momentum and win the Pac-12 North. But I've got Utah at number five. Washington State, they're ranked 25 this week, coming off of the bye. They're number four. This game in Pullman with Oregon is going to be huge. Not necessarily for Oregon. Oregon has had their two big games, but Washington State has not had a big game this year. College game day is going to be in Pullman for the first time ever. The fans on the Palouse are going to be going absolutely crazy. And this is this is Washington State's true shot to prove that they are overlooked. And you know, I get tweets each and every week. A lot of Coug fans were calling me out because I went on Seattle radio and I said that Oregon and Washington were the clear favorites in the Pac-12 North. And a lot of Coug fans were calling me out, said, of course, you wouldn't even mention Washington State. They've got the one loss by three on the road to USC. Other than that, they've been winning games, moving the football, scoring lots of points. And this is now Washington State's one shot until the Apple Cup. And by then, it may be too late. If Washington State wants to get into the Pac-12 North race, and if they want to get into some notoriety and get some pub on the West Coast, this is their only shot because there's going to be a ton of eyeballs on this game. Oregon coming off the big win. Washington State, the first time ever game day is going to be at Pullman. Anytime you get college game day at your site, that game brings more eyeballs, brings more attention. So here you go, Cougs. You got your shot. I got them at number four in the Pac-12 power rankings. USC with the big win against Colorado. USC has started to figure some things out. And I think that spells a little bit of danger for the rest of the Pac-12 South. Also, I think for Oregon, very fortunate that they don't play USC this year. But USC now has got a win over Washington State. They got the win over Colorado, who I thought was the best team in the South. So USC now has the game and the head-to-head advantage over the Buffaloes. That loss to Stanford, you just shake your head. It's just inexplicable. You can't quite figure out what was going on that day with USC. And I guess that's part of it is when you have a young quarterback. But I said this weeks ago, and I hate that I'm right all the time, but weeks ago, I said that USC is dangerous because the way that they're able to recruit, their first stringers are not necessarily more talented than Washington or Oregon. But their second string and third string players usually are. They're definitely more talented at the second string and the third string than anybody else in the South. That's just the advantage that USC is always going to have. And you are now going to see, going forward, especially on the defensive front, running backs, injuries start to become a factor for every team. Every team by October into November, injuries are always a factor. And USC has an advantage over every other team in the conference, especially in the South, because their injuries aren't as severe because they have more depth than anybody. And now that they've kind of started to figure some things out, you get a young quarterback finding his rhythm, JT Daniels. USC, I've got them with a big bump this week. They're the number three team in the conference. And then no surprise, look, Washington has lost one game in conference, and it was to Oregon on the road in overtime. They're a made field goal away from remaining undefeated and taking complete control of the Pac-12 North. Washington is number two, clearly, and I think Oregon is number one, clearly, in the conference. I mean, I know that I am biased, and I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir because this is an Oregon football podcast, and I've got them ranked number one, but they just beat a top 10 team. Their only loss is a game that they absolutely gave away. Oregon's the best team in the conference right now. You're halfway through. You still have at Washington State. You got at Utah, at Arizona State. As I mentioned, conference road games are killers. Those three games are going to be absolutely key. I don't see UCLA coming in or Arizona State coming into Autzen Stadium and making a stink, even though I said Arizona State can be kind of a thorn in somebody's side. But I don't think either of those two games with UCLA or Arizona State coming into Autzen Stadium are going to be an issue. Huge game this week. And of course, you've got any other game on the road when you got Arizona on the road. Arizona's tough at times, and that's always kind of a weird game. But that's not one that you should worry about as an Oregon fan. It's at Washington State, and it's at Utah. Those are two killers that Oregon's going to have to figure out a way to win. So there you go. Oregon State at the bottom, followed by Cal at 11, Arizona State at 10, UCLA at 9, Arizona State at 8, Stanford at 7, Colorado at 6, Utah 5, Washington State 4, USC 3, and then, of course, Washington at 2, Oregon at 1. Those are your Pac-12 power rankings. So I'm going to wrap the show up with some final thoughts. I was there at Autzen Stadium. So a lot of positives, by the way, a lot of positives from my experience at Autzen Stadium that I do want to share. And maybe we'll throw in a Q&A or two. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes to wrap up the program. This is the No Huddle Podcast, a production of the ThatCast Podcast Network. Back to wrap up the Monday pod here at the ThatCast.com. I'm your host, Justin Myers. This is the No Huddle.
Find the growing lineup of ThatCast Network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com. Now, back to Justin Myers and the No Huddle.
Now it's time for some final thoughts here on the Monday edition of the No Huddle Podcast. And I want to start with the Autzen Stadium experience. A handful of games this season, I have done what I haven't done in a long, long time. And I've actually been sitting in the stands and watching games for years when I was the pre and post game host when I was in Eugene. And then I, of course, left to go to Seattle and came back and took over the same job at a station in Portland. I spent all of my time sitting in the press box. I love sitting in the press box. There's a short line to the bathroom. It's a very comfy chair. They got food. They got cookies up there at halftime. You got nice TVs. You can see the replay. Everything's great. The only thing is you can't cheer. And I actually kind of like it. It's quiet. I can watch the game. You still feel the energy of the stadium, but you don't have a bunch of crazies around yelling at you. But because of the way things shook out, and I'm not doing pre and post game anymore this year, I've been able to actually watch a couple of games from the stands. And this was a game I was a little bit nervous about. I've joked here on the podcast, but my girlfriend is a Washington Husky alum. We'd planned on going to this game together, and she was a little bit nervous. And quite frankly, so was I, because I haven't been in the stands for an Oregon-Washington game, I think, since 2003. If that was the right, actually, no, take that back. It was 2004 was the last time I was actually in the stands for an Oregon-Washington game. And of course, I was a 24-year-old idiot who was probably way too intoxicated to realize anything. But I went to the game, and earlier this week, the Oregonian and Oregon Live put out what I think it looked like a joke of an article, but it didn't ring as funny. It seemed kind of mean-spirited, and somebody wrote about 10 reasons why Oregon fans are the worst. And the number one reason they put on there was that they are horrible to opposing fans. And of course, with this rivalry between Oregon and Washington, listen, the behavior for a lot of fans after that Stanford game didn't help. But me and my girlfriend had planned to go and watch this game from the stands, as like I mentioned, she's a Washington alum. So I figured if I'm there, I'll be fine. I can take care of things. And I wasn't surprised, but it was very, very nice to know that from the section that I was in and a lot of places in the stadiums, everybody seemed to enjoy the Autzen Stadium experience, even the Washington fans that I was around. And I thought, you know, maybe instead of trying to clickbait or, drum up some sort of attention, maybe the Oregonian or Oregon Live and whoever the reporter was who made that ridiculous list should spend some time sitting in the stands. Because I'll tell you what, I sat in the stands and I sat in a section that was, I would say, 70-30 Oregon fans to Washington fans. And there was some trash talking and there was some celebrating and some finger pointing. But you know what didn't happen? Nobody got in a fight. Nobody called each other a stupid name. There was no altercation. Everybody enjoyed a great football game. And I've seen Reddit posts and I've seen Twitter posts where people are talking about how everybody has probably got a story. And I'm sure that somebody probably had a bad experience who came down from Seattle because somebody acted like an idiot. But I'll tell you what, sitting in the stands a couple of times this season, and of course for this game, I have noticed that the idea that Oregon fans, or even, and by the way, I've sat in the stands at Washington games too, and Oregon State games, but the idea that the opposing fans and that anybody in the Pacific Northwest going to an opposing team's venue is going to be in danger is nonsense. Yes, you get 60,000 people anywhere, somebody is going to act like a jackass. It's mathematically, that's what the numbers are. It's science. But I think Washington fans and Oregon fans, for all of the, I think, hyperbole that is brought up around this game in terms of fan behavior, this was another great example. You had as good of a football game on the field as I've seen. It's one of the best Oregon games I've seen where neither team had an unfair advantage. Neither team got lucky. Both teams were going toe-to-toe, putting their best foot forward. And the people in the stands, at least as I mentioned from where I was sitting, were enjoying it and was a great experience. The fun of going as a visitor is you know you're going to take some trash talk. But nobody threw anything. Nobody was cursing at one another. Nobody was threatening or trying to fight anybody. Nobody had to call security to get kicked out. Now, maybe it was different in other sections, but I think after seeing that article in the Oregonian and seeing a lot of Twitter posts, a lot of people telling stories from 5-10 years ago, and one person had one bad experience and everybody then just paints every fan base with that broad brush, it's time for Oregon fans and Washington fans and Oregon State fans and everybody else to stop with the, well, what about nonsense? Because it happens every time. Oh, Oregon fans are terrible. Oh, really? Well, what about the one time when I went to Washington and they threw bread at me because I was an Oregon fan? Or what about the one time I went to Corvallis? For the most part, every time I've been to a stadium as a visiting fan, hasn't been many, but it's been enough, especially in Husky Stadium and Reser Stadium. And watching the game from Autzen in a mixed section of Oregon and Washington fans, everybody was enjoying the game. It was a great atmosphere. It was a really fun day of college football. So hopefully the Oregonian can stop running clickbait and can stop putting out a bunch of nonsense because it just flat out didn't happen. Here's the other thing. I mentioned it in the three things I learned over the weekend. It was an unbelievable game. And I think Oregon, Washington, USC, and Stanford, those four programs, if Cal eventually gets on track, because I think Justin Wilcox wants to build a tough win at the line of scrimmage, win at the point of impact type of program, if Cal can get going, you are going to start to see the perception of the Pac-12 change a little bit. And I think they're going to be a little bit more competitive over the next couple of years in going up against Big Ten teams and SEC teams. But you know who else has to come along for the ride and has to be better? That's the Pac-12 Conference. It was an awful week for the Pac-12 Conference because the news came out that they can't even get replay right. I think it's about time that if you were Oregon, Washington, USC, Stanford, these institutions that are that I think are set up to be competitive on a national stage over the next four or five seasons, need to start expecting more from the conference in terms of the way that they schedule games, the TV deals, and more importantly, the fact that the Pac-12 conference can't even seem to get a replay right because the business director and general counsel is on the phone during a Washington State USC game, giving his opinion on replays. At some point, and just like when you build a football program and there is a lack of leadership, at some point the Pac-12 conference is going to have to make a change of leadership because it flat out embarrassed itself this week. Just flat out embarrassed itself. And if the Pac-12 wants to get competitive nationally and stop handing over national championship trophies to the SEC and the Big Ten and the ACC, and they want to get back in this ballgame, you're going to have to make a change, I think, at the top of the conference in terms of leadership. Larry Scott got his TV network. Good for him. I think it's now time to bring in somebody that can take the conference a little bit further forward. There you go. There's the No Huddle podcast. Hopefully, you have a fantastic week. I will be back on Monday, full recap of Oregon, Washington State, College Game Day in Pullman on the Palouse. It's going to be a fantastic atmosphere. Huge, huge road test for Oregon. Can they take this now driver's seat in the Pac-12 North and continue the momentum when they go on the road to Washington State? Rate and review, iTunes, Spotify. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell a couple of strangers. Let everybody know what we're doing here on the No Huddle podcast. That's going to do it for me. We are, as always, a production of the ThatCast podcast network. Until next time, have a great week, everybody. I will talk to you on Monday. I'm Justin Myers, and this is the No Huddle.
Discover the growing lineup of ThatCast network podcasts and videocasts at ThatCast.com.